So, welcome everybody, and I'm back after 2 months in India, so we're going to resume the talks we've been having about mind and awareness, or Lohrig, and in specific, the seven cognizers here. Okay, so before we do, let's generate our motivation. And remember that although this material may be a bit technical, the purpose is to help us understand how our mind works, to help us be able to discern what is a reliable cognizer and what isn't, because this is very essential on the path. And so in that way, by conscientiously cultivating reliable cognizers and applying antidotes to unreliable ones, we'll be able to progress along the path to full awakening. And increase our ability to be of the greatest benefit to all living beings, as well as decrease our heedless actions that lead to the suffering of ourselves and others. So with this kind of motivation, then, let's listen and discuss this evening. Before I went away, we were talking about the different kinds of objects. Now we're going to start talking more specifically about the kinds of cognizers. So like I was saying in the motivation, that although some of this material may be kind of, well, it is technical, but it's really quite interesting and very relevant to our meditation practice, because it gets us to look at our mind and the kinds of cognizers we have, the different mental states we have, and to discriminate, you know, in which ones are we directly perceiving an object, which ones are we conceptually, you know, knowing, which are reliable or valid cognizers that can give us useful information, which ones are wrong cognizers. So by having this kind of framework, it gives us an ability to assess and evaluate our own mental states, which is very, very important because, you know, I named the book Don't Believe Everything You Think, because we have a lot of wrong mental states that we don't recognize are wrong consciousnesses, and we believe them. And that gets us into a whole lot of problems. And we similarly have a lot of presumptions that we think are reliable cognizers. And they may, you know, be inclined towards what's correct, but they're certainly not firm, you know, and so we need to make them firm. And we may have other presumptions that are really off the wall, and we have to recognize them as being so and do something about them. Okay, so this topic is really quite relevant. So as we go through it, you know, in the space between one talk and the next, try and be aware of your mind and see these different mental states as they arise, you know, and recognize them. And then it gets really kind of interesting. I should say that many people call it, I'm changing the terminology in some ways. Some people use the word cognitions, and I'm using cognizer, okay, even though it's not really a word in the dictionary, because a cognition, to me, seems to be, it doesn't seem to be something active that's actively perceiving. It seems to just be the general mental event. But here, when we're talking about cognizer, we're talking about the agent that's actually knowing an object or, you know, engaging with an object. Okay? And Jack very kindly typed up this, you know, definitions of cognizers and then another little chart. Oh, you figured out how to do it very nicely. Okay, I haven't had a chance to go through it and make sure that all the terminology is corresponding and everything, so we may have to change some terminology as we go along. Because I'm also realizing that as I'm reviewing my own notes and different translations of text, that people use so many different words, and it can be very, very confusing. So we'll try and systematize here. Okay. Okay, so we're using this text that we have here, and if you don't have it, you can write to the office, and Topo will send it to you. It's called The Presentation of Mind and Awareness. Mind and Awareness, is the Tibetan term is Lo Rig, okay? And a composite of all the important points, opener of the eye of new intelligence by Geshe Sampel. And so here we don't have the entire text, we have only the part about these, the division of the mind into seven. Okay, so this is going to be according to how the Galupa, the Galupas interpret the Sautantrikas. Okay, so the second school, right above the Vaivasikas, the Sautantrikas. Although sometimes I may throw in a few of the Prasangika meanings too, because they're quite different in some instances. It's interesting to see. So he starts out having bowed down to the glorious Losang Drapa, so that's Lama Tsongkhapa, the emanation of Manjugosha, Manjushri, treasury of wisdom. I extend this presentation of mind and awareness, composite of all the important points, in order to increase the clarity of knowledge of those with low intelligence. Okay, so he begins by making paying homage to the leader of the lineage, Jay Rinpoche, and, you know, implicitly, of course, to the Buddha, and seeing Jay Rinpoche as the emanation of Manjushri, because Jay Rinpoche used to be able to have conversations with Manjushri when he didn't know, only needed help with his meditation on emptiness. And we might be a little bit offended, because he's doing this to increase the clarity of knowledge of those with low intelligence. Well, who does he think I am? Somebody of low intelligence. Maybe he's right. Yeah, maybe he's right. Okay. So the presentation of mind and awareness has three parts, definitions, divisions, and the meaning of each division. Okay, so when we start out with definitions, we're first going to start out with the definition of mind. The Tibetan word for mind is lo. Okay. So a knower is the definition of a mind. That tells you a lot, right? It's a knower. It's an agent that knows. Okay, that which is clear and knowing, or another translation is luminous and aware, is the definition of consciousness. And the three terms, mind, which here is translated as lo in Tibetan, awareness is translated as rigpa. But don't this confused with Rigpa as used in Dzogchen, because they have very different meanings. And consciousness, the Tibetan term is Shepa, that these three are synonymous. Okay. So in this particular instance, they are synonymous. In other circumstances, that's not necessarily the case. Okay. So here they're talking about divisions. So there's three divisions of mind and awareness, into seven, into three, and into two, and there's probably some more ways to divide mind and awareness, you know, when we talk about different different ways. But here we're doing it in terms of the seven. So the seven are, one, what we call direct perceiver. Two is inference. Three is subsequent cognizer. Four is correct assumer. This is all written in the text, if you're following the text. Five is inattentive perceivers. Six is doubt, and seven is wrong consciousness. Okay? So he starts out here with explaining direct perceivers straight away. Some texts start out talking about prime cognizers first. Okay? So that can have some advantages, talking about prime cognizers, or sometimes it's... Well, let's just start with the direct perceivers, and then we'll get into the prime cognizers a little bit later. Okay? So the first one, direct perceiver. So the explanation has two parts, definitions and divisions. Okay, so an unmistaken knower that is free from conceptuality is the definition of a direct perceiver. Okay, so unmistaken, what does that mean?
Takes it in as it is. Takes it in as it is, as it exists without concept.
Without
concept.
Yeah, so it's an unmistaken in terms of its appearing object. So its appearing object is not a conception. Yeah, it's not a conceptual appearance. Yeah, so that's what unmistaken means here. So it's because we have unmistaken, we have, what's the other word that they're using? Incontrovertible or non-deceptive. Okay, so they sound initially similar, but they have specific meanings here. So unmistaken means that okay, it's a non-conceptual mind. Yeah, and then it's a knower. So we said before that we had that thing that a knower is the definition of mind. And it's free from conceptuality. So actually, just saying an unmistaken mind is sufficient to define a direct perceiver. You don't have to also repeat that it's free from conceptuality. However, they do so in the Sauchanchaka to eliminate one of the non-Buddhist schools called the Vaisheshika, because they say that sense consciousnesses are conceptual. Don't ask me why they say that. But they say that, and so to really show that they aren't, then they kind of repeat it. They say they're unmistaken and non-conceptual. Okay? And then, okay, now here he's going to get next sentence. He gets right into this thing of reliable cognizer. Okay, so let's deal a little bit with translation. The Tibetan is Sema, and usually, when I'm writing, I translate it as reliable cognizer. Many other people translate it as valid cognition. The reason I don't translate it as valid is because, to me, valid has the sense that it's kind of objectively valid, whereas reliable has the sense of it brings us useful information that we can rely on, which is actually what the meaning of this term sema is. Okay, it brings us, some people translate it as an instrument of knowledge. That sounds a little bit strange, but I think John Donne or somebody translated it like that. But the idea being that it can bring us some reliable information. Okay. Often in the Sautantrika school, it's translated as prime cognizer. Okay? And that's because the Sanskrit word pramana is glossed in two different ways. Okay? So according to Sautantrika, the pra in pramana It refers to the first moment of mind that realizes its object by its own power, not through the force of a previous reliable cognizer that induces it. Okay, so it's the first moment of knowing an object that knows that object by its own power, whereas the second moment is called the subsequent cognizer, and so it's not considered pramana, or the Tibetan word is sema, okay? Because subsequent is the second moment, it's not new, and they're glossing the Sanskrit word pra as new, or first. But to the Prasangika, pra means main, okay? In other words, it comprehends its main object. So for the Prasangikas, to be a sema, or a reliable cognizer, it doesn't have to be the first moment of knowing that object. It can be a later moment. But for the Satantrikas, they really are emphasizing the first moment that knows the object under its own power, you know, and getting that. Because they're saying, they're kind of diminishing the importance of subsequent cognizers because, you know, they didn't do it by themselves. Yeah. You know, the first moment picked itself up by its own bootstraps. It knew the object through its own power. The second moment, they're kind of, you know, a welfare case. They're leeching off the first moment, you know, because the first moment perceived the object, so then it's just easy to have the second moment. Okay? So the Satantrikas are, you know, kind of the... I shouldn't carry this analogy too far. the Satantrikas are, you know, they have their own way of seeing things. So that's why they translate it as prime cognizer. Okay? So sometimes I may use prime, sometimes I may use reliable, but it's meaning the same thing. I'm noticing here in some cases we have valid direct perceiver, you know, we want to change that to reliable direct perceiver. Okay, in our handout. Okay, so if we look at this one, yeah, that is a directly perceiving reliable cognizer. It has the qualities of being new, so it's the first moment knowing that object under its own power. It's incontrovertible, which means it's non-deceptive, it's undeceived. It has eliminated superimpositions on its object. It's realized its object. It's gotten at and ascertained its object. So that's the meaning of incontrovertible, or sometimes it's translated as non-deceptive, or what did they do here? Undeceived. Undeceived, is that a word? Undeceived. Undeceived or non-deceptive? Non-deceptive, I think. Okay. Or incontrovertible. And then it's unmistaken because it's a direct perceiver here, so it's doesn't have a conceptual appearance. And then again emphasizing that it's free of conceptuality. So that's the definition of a directly perceiving reliable cognizer. Yeah. Now, not all reliable cognizers are directly perceiving ones. And not all direct perceivers are reliable cognizers. Okay? So when we just have the definition of reliable cognizer or prime cognition on its own, then the definition is a cognizer that is new and incontrovertible. And there are two kinds of prime cognizers. One is the direct perceiving one. That's this one we're talking about. Second one is inference. But inference isn't a direct perceiver because it's conceptual. Two kinds of reliable cognizers. One is direct perceiver, the second one is inference. Okay? So here he started out first giving the definition of direct perceiver, and then he narrowed it a bit, giving the definition of a directly perceiving reliable cognizer. Okay. And then when direct perceivers are divided, there's four: sense, mental, apperception, and yogic direct perceivers. So conceptions are not direct perceivers in this system. Okay? So there's four kinds of direct perceivers. Yeah. So remember that a direct perceiver is, you know, knowing the object without the medium of a conceptual appearance. It's directly getting at it. It's going straight for the object. Okay, so when we look at the first kind of direct perceiver, which is sense direct perceivers, then there's five kinds, and those correspond to our five senses. Okay, so we have the visual, auditory, olfactory, gustatory, and tactile direct perceivers. Sometimes they call those, they label it by the name, like the eye consciousness, ear consciousness, and so on. They label it by the organ. I tend to use visual, auditory, you know, the more adjectives to in the label, because saying eye consciousness, okay, that links you to the eyeball, but it may be a bit confusing because the eyeball is, you know, your sense powers, your sense source there is something physical, whereas the consciousness isn't. Okay, so an unmistaken, non-conceptual knower that is produced from its own uncommon empowering condition, a sense, a physical sense power, is the definition of a sense direct perceiver. Okay, so we have these five sense direct perceivers. So they're unmistaken, right? So no conceptual appearance. Non-conceptual knower, so they're a knower, they're a mind. Okay, they're not a sense organ or anything. And they're a specific kind of mind that is produced by its own uncommon empowering condition. Sometimes instead of empowering condition, we say dominant condition. Yeah, that's an alternative translation. What it means is the chief condition, in this case, the physical sense power, that's enabling you to know the object. Okay, so how do you know colors and shapes? How do you know forms? Because, you know, the unique empowering condition that gives your visual consciousness the ability to know colors and shape is your eye sense power, or sometimes called it the eye source. Those are different names for it. Okay? So when we're talking about the sense powers, we're not referring to the gross organs. Okay? So when we're talking about the dominant or empowering condition for a visual consciousness, it's not referring to your whole eyeball. Because your whole eyeball doesn't perceive, does it? Yeah, you know, there's lots of parts to the eyeball that do different things. What it's talking about is a very subtle material, that is actually the sense power or the sense source. So this could be, what do you call it, the rods and cones on the retina? Yeah, so that's kind of how you would translate it into modern terms. I don't think they had those expressions in previous centuries. So they just said some subtle material. Yeah, so it's not some gross kind of material, but it's a subtle material. So similarly, for your auditory consciousness, it's not referring to this big thing hanging out the side of your head. But it's referring to, what is it, the stirrup? What?
Because it,
Malice, incus, and stable. But isn't the hammer and the anvil or something?
Hammer, anvil, and stirrup.
Stirrups, hammer, anvil, and stirrups. It sounds like you're getting on a horse.